Breaking news coming in from Bet365, and it's no surprise. Same game parlay from Bet365 just keeps getting better.
Well, it's even easier to make a bet. Choose from the most popular markets, like hits, run line, totals, and home runs. So many to choose from.
Download the app, start building your bet, and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply.
Everyone, John Wertheim here. This is this week's Sports Illustrated Tennis Podcast. The draw has been widowed. We are down to a women's final and men's semis on the men's side at the 2021 Australian Open. Strange tournament. Our chances of history are dwindling. We will not see Serena win her 24th major in Melbourne. We will not see Rafa Nadal eclipse Roger Federer and win his 21st major. We do still have Novak Djokovic in the draw, however, and we have an ascending star in Naomi Osaka. So I am joined by Jamie. It is Thursday afternoon, your time, if you are on the East Coast, Friday in Melbourne. And before this men's semis are played, we're going to try and do some tennis chit-chat. It's been a strange tournament, but in the end, it's been a lot of chalk. And I suspect that if you flew in from outer space and saw this draw, if you were in a vacuum and saw this draw, you would not have suspected the various twists and turns and detours that this tournament had to go through, both to be staged and then to play out over what's now been 12, 13 days. So in the end, there is chalk, and we have two players still alive, Osaka and Novak Djokovic, who a lot of people would have picked to win this thing on day one. So anyway, Jamie, how are you? Where are you? And how's the snow?
I was going to say, I'm in the middle of a snowstorm incoming here on the East Coast, but I'm doing okay. We have internet and we are warm for now, which is better than some other parts of this country, I think. So I'm doing all right. We are here. And as you said, we have Djokovic and Osaka and two players who we definitely would have chosen, but we also have some other names that have come up these past few days, this past week, that maybe no one would have really predicted. So all in all, I say that is a fine recipe for a damn good tournament.
I think you're right. And I think that this is part of what makes these events. Yes, it's the winner holding up the trophy. I don't know if you caught, we could jump ahead to Naomi Osaka. I thought she had a great answer. Someone said, I'm going to try and find the exact quote while we talk, but someone had said to her at one point, you know, what is it about you? How do you always come out playing your best tennis when so much is on the line? And she essentially says, I go in there, and I'm gonna get this exact quote. That's how good it is from Naomi Osaka. But so she says, you know, what makes you so hard to beat in Grand Slam finals? Quote, for me, I have this mentality that people don't remember the runners up. You might, but the winner's name is the one that's engraved, which I think is a great little, I think it's a great insight into Naomi Osaka. We can talk about her in a moment, but I also think that, you know, we remember these events as the years go by, we remember them by the winner, right? So you pick an event, you say, well, just pick one at random, 2003 US Open. And you say, that was Andy Roddick breakthrough. But what really makes these events is all of the context and the upsets and the Cinderella stories. And this tournament has certainly had those aplenty. You are perhaps referencing our qualifier, Aslan Karatsev, who plays Novak Djokovic in a few hours. But, you know, Jen Brady reaching the finals gives the story flavor, and who knows, she could win this thing. This tournament's really had it all, in addition, of course, to crowds and no crowds and COVID and lockdowns and quarantines and It's been a crazy event, but I said the same thing when we were in Paris. I have not heard, tell me if you've heard different, but I have not heard anyone say, boy, right now, 12 days in, I wish they'd never held this. And that was a real concern when this event started. So I think this will be certainly not a financial success, but I think in terms of tennis and continuity and distraction and giving 128 players in both singles draws an opportunity to play tennis and earn a living. I think overall this event has been a success, and Tennis Australia should take a bow and then take a long nap because I think we're only hearing half of it. But what I've heard about what it's taken for this event to be pulled off is not something that we should neglect to talk about. But let's start with recency effect. Let's start with the Serena Osaka match. Why don't you go first and tell me what you saw?
Yeah, I mean, I've read and watched and listened to a lot since last night's very, very quick match, I will say, with a scoreline that perhaps, I don't know if it was telling for the match or not, but I am both surprised and unsurprised by the result, just because Naomi Osaka is playing completely incredible right now. I mean, she's on this 20-match winning streak, and that really extends back into, you know, this time last year. She has gone to the quarterfinals at a slam, and once she gets past that point, she's not losing. And now she, you know, is bidding to become the first woman to win her first four major finals since Monica Seles. So all of those things, she is just, as you wrote in your piece from last night, that there's a new star on the rise. And I think if any match solidified that, it was last night. You know, she really beat Serena at her own game. And I mean, everything was on point. I think there was a lot of things that needed to go right for both players. But for her, the serving, the mental part of the game, you know, you thought there for a second at that, you know, when Serena broke her for 4-4, you thought that maybe she was starting to feel the nerves. She was starting to, you know, maybe it was going to be able to go three sets and Serena was going to pull it out, but she came back, and the confidence and the just everything that she did to fire back at that point, I think just proved and said so much about the type of player she is right now.
I've got two parlor games for you, Jamie. So here's the first one is, if I said, describe this player, and we would say it's a big match. She came to show up. And as you said before, she's now 11-0. Once she reaches the quarters of majors, she went down to love and it looked a little shaky and she looked a little nervous, but then she steadied herself. She dialed in her strokes. She out hit her opponent. She served more aces than anyone else in the tournament. She played a loose game in 4-all and then didn't lose another point the rest of the match. Who is this player? You might suggest Serena Williams. I mean, I think you're right that she really did beat Serena at her own game last night. Osaka did, and she also played tennis that I thought was very reminiscent of peak Serena Williams. The other parlor game, which I'd be curious for you to answer, is I put this out on Twitter. I said, name me another athlete who is not just, you know, Rafa's modest and the Greek Freak is modest. I mean, it's not really modest. It's more than that. Name another athlete who is so sort of sheepish and self-deprecating and sort of admirably sort of offbeat and then is absolutely a killer when the match is in play. I mean, I'm just fascinated by Osaka's mix. I'm curious if you have ever seen that in another athlete, because it's really Jekyll and Hyde stuff is from where I see it.
Yeah, I saw that. I love the all those adjectives. You know, I think sheepish is definitely a good one. And I'm not sure. And I think we've seen this big, you know, polar opposites before with her, but it's becoming consistent, and the more we see her in slam finals, I think the more intense that opposition becomes. And she, you know what, for me and for fans, I think it makes her very, very easy to root for and get behind. You want to see someone like that succeed, because, you know, when she has these off-court matches, and of course the first thing she does, big microphone, big crowd, into another slam final, and the first question, she just kind of stands there, shrugs her shoulders a little bit, and the first response is a big that sort of radiates the stadium. And I don't mean that in a bad way. I'm not making fun of her at all. I just think it's so relatable and so normal. And even I think earlier we would contribute that to her age, right? She's so young. Of course, we all recall the US Open with Serena, and there's just a different dynamic now, but it's still the same inherent personality traits that you mentioned, but she's more mature. And I think seeing that and just kind of, it makes you smile, it makes you laugh, you feel for her, you feel with her. And I mean, it's great. And the fact that she's able to dial that back and then dial something else completely different in is incredible.
I don't know if you saw how she signed the camera to tell her.
Yeah.
You told her sister to stop sending her like weird emojis or sort of weird, what'd you say?
Weird pictures in the group chat.
Yeah, weird pictures in the group chat.
Everyone's gripe is that group chat that's really, that one group chat that's really annoying. Oh, so again, very easy to relate to her in many ways, which I think is great, again.
And then she marries that with, it's 4-all in the second set of a major semifinal, and I've just played an awful game, and Serena Williams is on the other side of the net. All right, well, time to go down to the basement and get some winners. And she didn't win. She didn't lose another point. I don't know if you remember, this is one of my favorite stats of the tournament. In the fourth round, she had the misfortune of playing Garbiñe Muguruza and was down match point. And as if it were an option, she just sort of said, you know, I'll take this off the menu. And she just didn't miss another ball. She literally, for the next 22 points, did not make an error and ended up winning the match 7-5 in the third. I mean, it was just, she's really become the, I mean, it's Serena-esque.
Exactly. You took the words out of my mouth because I was just about to say that how many times have we seen Serena close a match like that or respond to, whether it's pressure or her back against the wall, and we just, our response as onlookers is just too good, right? Just it's just too good. You can't beat that, right? I mean, how many times did we say that about Serena? And I think it was really an interesting dynamic to watch that match last night and be saying the same thing about Osaka against Serena.
Let's talk a bit about Serena. She was asked, you know, the question all athletes get asked, and did you take an extra moment when you left the court to savor it because you're not going to be back? And she dismissed that as she might, as she might a low-hanging lob, and basically said, you know, I don't know, and if I did know, I wouldn't tell you, which is, of course, her prerogative. Where do you have any – it's all speculation at this point because she essentially did give any indication. Any – sense where she goes from here? Any sense where you'd like to see her go from here?
Yeah, I mean, I'm not sure I made much of the pause, if you will, as she was leaving the court. I know there was some discussion around that, if that was a you know, more permanent goodbye to the fans in Melbourne. I'm not sure. I think at this point, what we can be sure of is we are seeing a somewhat decline of Serena, but also, you know, the rise of other players around her. I think for a long time, there was just no one that could beat her. There was no one that had the either physical or mental capability to overcome her, especially on the Grand Slam stages. And it was definitely a big match for her, but I'm not sure. I think she plays out this year, but after that, you know, her sister Venus is still out there, you know, and so I don't know if she wants to continue on with her, if they leave the game together, if they don't, if, you know, there's so many questions. And I think the layoff that happened in 2020 because of Corona, I think maybe changed her mind a little bit, maybe extended her plans a little bit. So I think it's a little too early after that to make any big predictions. What about you?
I think you're right. And I would add that this is really an unfortunate position for an athlete in an individual sport where, you know, I mean, I think only the most rabid fan and subjective fan wouldn't say she's in a state of decline. I mean, it's now been more than 4 years since her last major. She just doesn't have that fear factor anymore. you know, that this is not the Serena Williams in her prime. On the other hand, she's still playing deep into these events. She beat Simona Halep. She beat Sabalenka. She's very much in the mix. She still has, I mean, that tap suit, got, you know, the one-legged FloJo outfit got as much attention as anyone's fashion. You know, in a team sport, it's easy, right? You sort of shift to, you become the sixth man, or you're used to averaging 30 points a game, and now maybe it's only 18, but you're still a vital part of the team. You don't have that luxury in an individual sport. So right. How in the world, at some level, you say, how could you ask her to step aside? She might be 39 years old, but she's still getting to the latter rounds of these events. She still has buzz. She still has income. She's still beating top three players. And at the same time, Serena is Serena, and she is an admirably prideful woman and always has been. I think Venus has sort of resigned herself to, I enjoy the process. I enjoy the competition. My days of winning majors are likely over, but A, you never know, and B, just competing as a pro athlete is enough for me. I don't think Serena goes there, and I don't think she ever gets there. So it's very tough. I don't envy her at all. I mean, it's you know, you're used to winning three majors a year. You've got 23 of these. You could retire tomorrow and be the best ever. It's probably no fun to come and win five or six matches, but not seven. And at the same time, how do you walk away if any other profession, neurosurgery or, you know, novelist, pick a profession, how do you walk away when you do your job better than all but a few other people in the world? So
yeah,
I don't know. I mean,
I think that's a great point. Tricky. I think it's a great point, because I think you're right, is that she may not be winning, but she's getting awfully close every time. And for her, for someone of her fierceness and someone with such a competitive mind like she has, I've got to think that it's just, every time she gets closer, every time there's a new chance, you've got to just want it more and more. I don't think that this decreases anything. While her play might be declining in comparison to the people around, I think her desire is.
I also will point out that her press conference was cut short, and I'm sure everybody's seen it by now. And if not, you can throw it onto the YouTube, but she left in, you know, she left tearfully. Clearly, she was very disappointed. She also, I noticed, I mean, she didn't take a lot of questions, but she did not mention Naomi Osaka by name. I noticed last year, too, when she lost to Wang Qiang of China, she did not mention her by name either. I mean, there is still a real competitive fire that burns here. And I say this with all respect and admiration, it must be really hard to still be competitive and not be the player you were, and to go into those press conferences not with the trophy next to you. And I think she's, you know, last night was another indication. She's clearly still wrestling with all of this. But again, if I'm her team and she wants to play, I tell her, you just beat a top three player in straight sets. You just beat one of the hottest players on tour in Sabalenka. You were right there. Even, you know, the first 10 minutes of the match, you were beating Naomi Osaka. It's not like, you know, it's not a combat sport where you're taking on, you know, irreversible physical injury. This isn't Muhammad Ali fighting Larry Holmes and Trevor Burbick on a barge. You're right there in these matches, and you only need to win 14 sets. I mean, you don't need to regroup for next season. So I don't think she's a contender, or at least a top contender at the French Open, but I don't know. I still wouldn't bet. Based on what I just saw in Melbourne, I would not bet against Serena Williams at Wimbledon. Let's give Jen Brady a little love, Jamie, shall we?
Yes, I was going to say that, because we've spent a lot of time in previous pods as well talking about Serena or Osaka or others, but let's definitely talk about Jen Brady into this final against Naomi Osaka. And, you know, I don't think we give her enough credit. At 25 years old, you know, she took three sets to make it here, but She was in only one other major semifinal, last year's US Open, and she lost to Osaka in three sets. So it's going to be an interesting match. I mean, I think that match was, it was a good one, very, very good. And I think that Osaka, you know, has some game planning to do, to say the least. But what are your thoughts? I mean, I think for someone that doesn't follow tennis as closely, they see Jen Brady, maybe they've heard of her because of the US Open, but maybe not. What is your like elevator pitch for Jen Brady, or how are you like, who is Jen Brady? Like, where, you know, where is she coming from? What's your response when people may ask you that?
My response is, we have seen phenoms. We've seen Coco Gauff. We've seen these can't miss prospects. And we've seen young stars that have owned particular surfaces. And we've seen players build steadily. What I've not seen a lot of is what Jen Brady's done, which is basically she went to UCLA. She can scarcely hit a forehand without hearing about that. She had, you know, 3-4 years of, you know, a good, decent player, 40 to 80. And she basically said in the middle of her career, this is not good enough for me. I am willing to cross an ocean and train in Germany. I'm willing to change my diet. I'm not satisfied just being a run-of-the-mill pro tennis player. I want this good to great. And a lot of players say that. Very few of them actually go to these lengths, and very few of them pull it off. I mean, she has made this mid-career transition where she had, you know, she was getting into main draws and she'd win a match here and there. They talked about last night she beat Carolina Mukova. They played once before. It was about 18 months ago. And then you look at Jen Brady, was ranked number 86 at the time. And what she did in the middle of her career, in the middle of her 20s, is completely transform herself. And she is an absolute top-tier player. That whipping forehand she has is one of the great weapons in women's tennis right now. As you say, she made the semifinals of the U.S. Open. Again, not content, hey, I got there, that's great. The very next hard court major, she does one and possibly two better and gets to the finals. This is really an admirable story. And I think, you know, every player wants to play like Serena and Federer and Djokovic and Nadal. But I think this is if you want a player to emulate, this is much more realistic, which is a player who just said, I am willing to do what it takes to go from one level to the next. I want to be promoted, and I can't go marching into the boss's office with a counteroffer. I've got to do this myself. And she's basically done what it's take to get the self-promotion. And right now she is playing top 10 tennis, and she has been for since the reset, and there's no indication it's going to stop. I think it's really admirable what she's done. And if everyone could do it, this is rare that a player in the middle of their career would pull this off. And that in itself sort of tells you how admirable it is.
Yeah, I think I read something where during the quarantine, she basically did not like allow herself to just like hang out and watch Netflix, because she didn't want to get into a place where that was the only thing that she wanted to do. And I think that's like really, it says a lot about, you know, it speaks exactly to what you're talking about and how she really is laser focused on what she wants. And she is not going to bask in this, you know, semifinal, final, Grand Slam final glory. She's focused, and she's been focused since, you know, reaching that semifinal at the US Open. And I think, you know, a lot of other players might, you know, go out and enjoy. And I'm not saying she didn't, but I think it just says a lot to your point about her mentality and what she's really, you know, what she's really trying to do. And I think the biggest question with her is whether or not this continues. And I think we've seen her stick around for a while, so I think it will, but I don't know if you have any thoughts, if she becomes a consistent top 10 player, if she becomes a Grand Slam champion. I mean, it's really, where do you see her falling within the next few years?
I think it ranges surface by surface. We'll see how she does at Wimbledon. I think obviously hard courts is much more her surface than clay. I think some of it too is the players ahead of her. We'll see what the final brings. I mean, right now, I think like most people, I would pick Osaka, though, as you referenced, Jamie, they played maybe the best match of 2020 in that U.S. Open semifinal. I think she can win majors. And I think, you know, a fair amount will have to go right. But I think that serve, that kick serve for the second serve, which won her a lot of points in that decisive game yesterday. And that forehand, she's held up. She's been a durable player. She's won her last two matches in three sets and has been stronger than her opponent physically in both cases. I think she can win majors. Let me, as we keep an eye on the clock, let me make a quick public service announcement. 30 seconds.
Go ahead.
I woke up to a barrage of tweets and texts about Chris Evert. I did not watch the match. I don't know what she said. All I will say is Chris Evert is one of my favorite people in the sport. She is absolutely lovely. I've seen her do and say so many kind things to so many people. And she's good people. I don't know what she said, but I hope people will give her the benefit of the doubt, whatever it is, because I've seen, you know, she's self-admittedly, full disclosure, she is a friend, but she's a lovely person. And I'm not sure quite what happened, but people ought to know that. Let's go quickly to the men's side. I think there was a huge upset this tournament, and we're not really talking about it much. And that's Rafa Nadal having a 2-sets-to-love lead against a player he's dominated in their previous meetings and falling in the quarterfinals to Tsitsipas. People say Tsitsipas beats Nadal on a fast court. And I think you say, all right, I can see that happening. Rafa being up 2-sets-to-love, I think, turns this from a perhaps somewhat surprising result into a shocking result. And I'm not sure why. This did not seem, at least in my quarters, this did not seem to get quite the attention that I thought it might. Any thoughts on that one, Jamie?
Yeah, I mean, we've had this conversation, you know, as we were previewing the season and last year, you know, and we talk about the big three and we always ask the question, you know, when will that next generation, when will the younger guys overtake the big three? And When will we see, you know, I think even in your, you know, predictions, I think one of the questions was who will win their first Grand Slam in 2021. So we've been asking it for a while. And, you know, I think you see players like Dimitrov or Raonic, you know, their times may have passed, but, you know, now this 25 and under group, you know, is the next group here. And Tsitsipas, he made it happen in this match. But I think one of the things it really brings is just the belief, you know, that these players, these young players can beat the big three in Grand Slam matches. We talk about it, best of three versus best of five. And that was a 5-set match that Tsitsipas beat Nadal in. So I think that's a really important point. And you know what, we'll see how it shakes out and if he can continue it and make that final.
Before the TV gods call, last question. Does anyone beat Novak Djokovic heading into the final weekend? What do you think?
I don't think so. I think we're going to have a good final, whether it's Medvedev or Tsitsipas, but I think Djokovic is just way too dominant in Melbourne.
I think the big question in men's tennis for a long time has just been what you said, which is not just who can beat the big three, but who can do it in a major, best of five versus best of three, not just physically, but with the lapses, with the mental ebbs and flows, with all these sort of gyrations and undulations that happen in a match, and managing moments and managing the inevitable lulls. Novak Djokovic would win number 18, which would put him back two behind Federer and Nadal, with the French coming. The big three goat race does not stop, neither do we. Jamie, I've got to run to TV. I'm being buzzed and beeped and texted. Always a pleasure. Thanks everyone for listening. Enjoy the final few days of the 2021 Australian Open. We will be back next week. iTunes, Stitcher, wherever you get your podcasts is where you can subscribe. Feel free to leave a review, and we'll do it again next week. We'll be right back.
Breaking news, and this one is almost unbelievable.
Yeah, it's all about new customers at Bet365, because they get $150 in bonus bets when they bet $5, win or lose. And even better, bonus bets can be used on the spread, totals, and player props.
There you have it. Bet $5 to get $150 in bonus bets, win or lose. And see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. T&Cs apply. Available in app only.
Americans love using their credit cards, the most secure and hassle-free way to pay. But D.C. politicians want to change that with the Durbin-Marshall credit card bill. This bill lets corporate megastores pick how your credit card is processed, allowing them to use untested payment networks that jeopardize your data security and rewards. Corporate megastores will make more money, and you pay the price. Tell Congress to guard your card, because Americans lose when politicians choose. Learn more at guardyourcard.com.